You're listening to the Every Plant Story podcast, where we collect, share, and discover the stories, lessons, and passions behind the people who are always growing more. You're listening to the Every Plant Story podcast, and here is your host, Shane.
And hey guys, welcome to the Every Plant Story podcast, the podcast where we share all kinds of plant stories from here in the life of us at Gabriella Plants and also all around the plant community. I am so excited. I know it's been a while since the last podcast. I am so excited to have our guest with us today. Harry Liu has made not only a name for himself in the online plant community, and you'll get to hear more of his backstory, but he also, towards the end of the podcast, talks about the process of acquiring plants and anthuriums, specifically the entire velvet leaf anthurium collection from ReGardens Marie over there at ReGardens, and how much he's trying to maintain those stories that go with the plants, whether it's from forums or handwritten notes. He has it all, and he has a heart for sharing every plant story. So in just a moment, we're going to be right back with Harry in just a moment. And with me right now, we have Harry Liu. Harry, so good to have you on the podcast. Welcome.
Thank you. Hi, everyone. Hi, Shane. It's wonderful to be here. I'm surprised I'm even here, actually.
Yeah, well, we've been going back and forth in some messages, and I know you have some really exciting news we're going to get to later in the podcast, but for those who are unfamiliar with you, do you want to introduce yourself, where you live, your business, what got you into plants, maybe?
Hi, everyone. My name is Harry, and I currently now live in Southern California in Orange County, but I've been around and I started my plant journey in Wisconsin, actually. So some of you might know me from the Midwest. But my company brand or company website is plantzaddytherapy.com. That is kind of like plant daddy, but with a Z. And I'm most active on either Facebook or Instagram. You can probably find me more active on Instagram these days, and that my handle is at HAILUU 89. You can guess what 89 is if you like.
Make sure that we put all those links in the bottom. But what got you into plants, or what made you start doing this thing?
Oh, okay. So, what's that? It's such a trip down memory lane. Okay, so I went to graduate school in Wisconsin, in the University of Wisconsin-Madison for mathematics. And that's when the pandemic hit. I'm a very, very proud COVID-born plant person.
That's awesome.
My tagline is COVID-born, hear the slay. So I started, because we had just bought the house in Wisconsin at the time in probably 2019, early 2020, late 2019, early 2020, something like that. And we were just furnishing and adding more greeneries into the home. And then the pandemic hit and we had just bought the house and now we're isolated in a brand new home in a brand new neighborhood. We knew nobody, right? So I was just naturally kind of gravitated towards collecting and getting more plants into the home and joining that kind of bandwagon of houseplants, right? Just adding nature into your home because that's the only place you get to be now at the time. And then it got me through a lot of struggles, personal struggles, a lot of mental health issues surrounding the event and the general climate at the time. So I started collecting and just picking up free plants and discarded plants from everyone in the community and either rehabbing them, growing them in my garden, growing them in the home and sharing them with people. And then I started a Planzetti Therapy nonprofit project. That's how I started, actually. And that was really, I was just propagating these small house plants and make a cute little plant kit that anyone could get for free. And each kit would have 5 plants in there with a little cute spray bottle. It's kind of like a cute little plant kit to get people started in nurturing someone or nurturing something. And just, you know, having a purpose and having something to do during a pandemic. And I think it got pretty well supported by the community at the time. And that's how I started. And then, of course, you know, the collection journey kind of took off from there when I started propagating spider plants and pothos and succulents and all of these very common house plants. And we slowly, or I slowly migrated to, buying the first variated Thai constellation at a time, or pink princess, right? And then slowly inching myself into the more serious collector type of plants in early pandemic stages of the houseplant craze.
That's fascinating. So you started with not really necessarily wanting to start a business per se, but just help other people find kind of the relief and the, like you said, something to nurture, right? That you found. Yeah. It wasn't really a business at the beginning.
No, not at all. Not until like a year and a half to 2 years after, like down the line. So I think it's probably still out there in the wild internet world that my plant therapy project is probably still up. My old academic website actually has a tab. I think it's still there. So I'm a mathematician. So if you actually like find me in the math world, you might actually see the project. That was my crazy face there. Yeah. So no, it was a wonderful thing that I got to experience. There was a lot of support. There were a lot of great feedback. And honestly, I think the main thing why it was therapy, or there's a therapy part to my plant journey. And that's because I think that plants have really, really helped my mental health, and just having something for me to look forward to, something for me to consistently do during that kind of really crazy struggling time, with just so much turmoil. So I don't know. It really helped, and I was hoping that sharing that with people would also, you know, spread that positivity and at least, or you know, just kind of get us on through the day. That was, you know, 3 years ago. That was it. Right, just let's get through today. So yeah, no, it's wonderful. I love it. I got a lot of support from the community, from people. I still am in touch with them. I'm still very, very grateful that that is how I started. My business side, actually, there's another fun story. My business side started on the first social media purge. If the audience hasn't actually been super active on social media, specifically Facebook, it's like during the pandemic is when this whole thing called plant purging started, right? Where you post and you sell things on in a Facebook group. I think that was born in the pandemic.
It's yeah, really interesting. I had never heard of plant purges. And honestly, I was a late adopter to that. In my mind, I was like, oh, I have an Etsy store, later the website, you know. But that was a huge thing for people, and kind of also that, like, you know, easier to do when you're already on. I mean, all of us spent way more time on social media than we're proud of during the pandemic. So this was, you know, kind of the plant market infiltrating in some extent the social media realm.
Yeah. No, it's a really interesting kind of concept, and it worked relatively well. I think the main thing was because it felt a lot more personal, right? When you're going on someone's purge, you felt like you're actually buying from a face, buying from a person that you know. You actually talk to them, and you know the person who's actually selling it to you. It's not a blank screen and a blank website name on Etsy store that has zero personality. Like, these things come through, and I was very adamant on actually projecting my genuine personality in everything that I do. I think it's a big part of who I am, and it's a big part of what I want to retain. But anyhow, so like the I just recently, yesterday actually, realized I have a huge spot for a soft spot for nostalgia. And yesterday, I just realized that the catalyst of my e-commerce business is actually still with me. It's interesting. But I'll tell you the story. My first plan first, I have been collecting for a few months, maybe a few, almost a year, not quite, at the time. And in March of 2020, either 2020 or 2021, I can't remember. Probably 2020, actually. In March of 2020, so now this was pandemic, and I couldn't come home to my mom, major 60th birthday at the time, in Vietnam, because we were on the full-blown lockdown. There was no in and out of Vietnam. My family's in Vietnam, or was in Vietnam at the time. So I wanted to get her a diamond ring for her birthday. And so that was me propagating and selling a lot of my collector plans to raise funds for that diamond ring. All right, so that was my whole like first perch ever. And it became a relatively huge success, and I got really supportive, and I bought my mom the ring. I bought my mom the ring. I am actually wearing that ring right now. That's why I'm feeling really nostalgic about it. Because, oh, wait, this is the ring that started it all. So this is actually interesting. I did end up buying my mom that ring, and then we upgraded the ring for her. So I now inherited the ring that started my business. So I guess this is my business ring. It's quite interesting. And then, you know, it kind of took off from there. I created a website, propagated more plans, and just kind of did more and more plan selling on the e-commerce space.
That's fascinating. So you really did it to help show love to your mom, for lack of a better phrase, through this ring. How was, like, did you tell your mom that was the plan, or was this kind of behind her back?
I did not tell her that I was going to get her a ring, but
she probably wouldn't have believed you that you were going to sell plants. You know, if your story is anything like mine, like you're going to quote unquote sell plants online and buy me a ring. Okay.
Yeah.
I'll see it when I believe, you know, I'll believe it when I see it.
Yeah. But it's crazy and interesting. Like during that really the height or over the ups and downs of the pandemic, plant craze. It's really, there were a period of just kind of, I call it the bullish run, where anyone could actually join the plant craze. It was on a huge uprise that anyone could have joined and kind of just made a profit regardless of really what your intention was. Like you could just want me to share and all that, but the market was just driving everything up. So it was a very fortunate time for me to join. Like it wasn't intentional. I don't think it was opportunistic. It really was just kind of circumstantial that, you know, the pandemic hit. I really wanted to buy my parents something because I couldn't visit them. And my grandfather passed away. So I did send something to my family back then as well, during the pandemic. So there were a lot of turmoil, and I just kind of, oh, you know what? I spent so much of my money during the pandemic into plants. So I was like, oh, you know, I can propagate these and probably recoup some of them. And then being a smaller homegrown propagator, it was a little easier to propagate three plants out of one and then sell the two and keep one, things like that. And then turns out that, you know, the pricing structure at the time was just pretty easy where you buy one plant, say in March of 2020, you cut it into three pieces, you root it out, you grow it into three small plants. Each of the three small plants, say in June or maybe July of the same year, would have sold for double.
Right.
That was the market.
Yeah, it's I often tell the story in greenhouse tours that when we first started, you know, doing the online thing, because obviously I took over the wholesale operation my dad had started. I tell people that, like, when somebody finally told me that, you know, Pink Princess was a plant that we had grown for a large, you know, a long time. And they were like, you know that these are being sold online for, I think they were saying $99 a cutting at the time. And I can honestly say the bigger surprise to me was not the price tag. It was, wait a second, there's plants online? Like, I'm waiting on a fax machine. You know what I mean? I'm waiting on a fax machine or a phone call to make a wholesale order. And you're telling me these things are just being sold online? So it's crazy how much the pandemic, and you're right, when the pandemic first started, basically, if you had a plant and you listed it somewhere for sale, it sold. There really wasn't a whole lot you had to do. You know, the market was not nearly as saturated. How do you think the market has changed since then? Or are you still propagating as much? Are you propagating more? What's, you know, your kind of current operations, you know, now in 2024, a couple years after the pandemic?
Right. So, I mean, it's quite interesting of a whole ride so far. I always say this when I talk to people and when I kind of just share my experiences, because I was, again, very, very fortunate that I started this journey at a really good time. Right. So with that, I had enough investment and capital in this plant game to sit through some of the downs. Right. Of course, we've gone through like a lot of ups and downs. I think there were crazy ups. And then there were also kind of crazy downs as well. You know, you brought up the Pink Princess. My first Pink Princess cutting was $128. And I still have that plant, actually. It was the first plant that I broke 3 digits. So it's, you know, like, and then it's probably what? Maybe $20 at the garden store for the whole plant.
Yeah, 20 to 40, like, depending on how many stems. Or yeah, once it goes into TC and becomes more mass produced, which we talk about a lot on the podcast in previous episodes. Like the whole industry is trying to constantly, like, oh, you guys want Pink Princess? All right, cool. Well, we'll start growing some. Which for you, like you were saying, you can take the 3 nodes, right? Propagate each node, and it 3 months later, you're able to sell and recoup all your money. But for commercial growers, you know, that process takes 18 months, 24 months to finally get something into TC or to build up enough stock to be able to bring it to mass market. But it's eventual, because all growers want to grow what people want. I do think that that's, you know, the interesting part of the rise and fall. And even we don't have to go into it now, but for those who maybe hadn't seen it, you know, there's that new Monstera that just dropped that caused all kinds of uproar. You know, our most expensive plant ever was like $300. I can't ever imagine spending $40,000 on a plant. But when you're talking about a one of a kind plant, you know, there are still some species that are still rising, even if others have fallen.
Of course. And I think that's the thing. Like, I'm very fortunate to actually be able to kind of withstand all of these winds and storms surrounding different plants. Like, a lot of plants have risen and then fell due to, you know, like, if you want to get very technical, maybe not too technical, it's just like whatever people say, macroeconomy, right? Supply and demand. Sure, when the balance shifts, then the whole thing shifts with it. That's natural. But I don't think that it's necessarily the entire plant landscape or the plant economy as a whole. I really think that there are still pockets that are experiencing their own bubble. Right. So I don't know if you actually talk about different trends in your podcast, but there are plants that are still rising and have been rising this past year through the roof. There are plants that are falling for the various reasons. You know, I genuinely think that a big part of what I want to do and what I retain my value in is not focusing on the supply, but more so on the demand. And that is either really being connected to the community and to the industry as a whole to understand what is coming next, what is happening, having a pulse on the market. What I have, what I can offer, but a more major part is who I can inspire to grow? Can I raise the next generation of growers? I want to be part of the creating the demand, as in creating the next generations of passionate growers and passionate collectors. That's who I am. That's the people that I resonate with. And those are the people I want to focus on, right? So, you can produce 10,000 of this plant in the industry in 18 months with tissue culture or however method it is, and fill that demand and then oversaturate the supply. Or if I'm able to produce 5 of my plants, but also really explain to people why these plants are so special and teach people how to understand how to grow these and instill that passion, I can probably bring a demand of 10 plants, like 10 people who want this plant. I only have 5. That is doubling. And then my buyers or other of those people who buy from me can actually continue to propagate and pass that on. That's kind of the space that I am in.
Yeah. And I think that's really, really smart. I think one of the things we talked about with our previous head grower, Brett, was one thing I've seen in the last couple of years is so many new, not just like cultivars, but genuses, right? Plants people mm-hmm. would not be able to pronounce necessarily. They don't know where it's from. They don't know how to take care of it, those types of things. And, you know, that's not what generates search results, because guess what? If it's kind of new on the scene, like even the geo that Costa released, right? Like none of us had really talked about that or grown it or anything like that. So now you're introducing a whole new genus. I just think that's such an amazing opportunity for education. But at the same time, if people aren't educated, kind of what you were saying, how much demand is actually there? So I love that you're, and I've looked up to you for a long time as being somebody who's really, really though, has the educator. And like you said, personality is everything. You know, you can go buy plants on Amazon now, but they don't have the same experience buying from you or from me or from the other guests of the podcast or anything like that. On an Amazon type platform. So what you're doing is amazing. I know also though, you know, you've had an amazing opportunity recently. And for those of you, like you mentioned, who have been following you for a while on social media, you've been posting about your latest acquisition. Do you kind of want to go into the origin story of that? I know we're pressed for time and stuff, but tell me that experience.
Oh, okay, so this is the latest biggest news in my career, at least. So maybe 2.5 years ago, I started getting into Ethereum. So you have just now briefly talked about how people jump from one genus to another, right? Because, you know, like you get bored or whatever, it gets saturated in one genus, you start on the next one. So I started growing Ethereum, and really planning on focusing more on Ethereum because I had moved to the Bay Area in California. So practically I lived in the cloud forest climate for 1.5 to 2 years. That's why I want to switch to a genus that really, really is super adaptive to that climate. Then an opportunity actually kind of fell from the sky, I guess. But if you are into Ethereum, Velvet Leaf Ethereum specifically, you probably have heard of Reed Gardens, or at least some of their cultivars, some of them really well sought after, one of the probably most talked about and most discussed and unique Ethereum cultivar out there is the Ethereum Delta Force, and that was created at Reed Gardens by Steve and Marie Knott a really long time ago. Steve has already passed, and Marie is now probably into her 80s or close enough to that. So in September of last year, Marie has announced that she would close Reed Gardens after the 52 years of business, starting from her father-in-law. It's a multi-generational kind of garden that's been cultivating and growing and breeding a lot of different things and primarily focusing on aeroids. So I got an opportunity to actually acquire all of Reed Gardens and Ethereum, Velvet Leaf and Ethereum. I could not actually acquire all of their plants. They had a lot of other things, but all of their Velvet Leaf and Ethereum are now with me, and they have all been moved to California. So the process is complete, and I had to like be really hush-hush about it. So you know, I have just now made the announcement in late February of 2024, even though we reached the agreement in September of 2023, just around IAF time. It's been a long time coming. It's extremely exciting, but also I feel really honored and humbled that this opportunity fell onto me, that I get to carry this tradition of really collecting, cultivating, and creating, surrounding really the passion, the love, and the integrity of house plants and collections. Right, Reed Gardens have been around for 52 years, and probably prior to that, you know, they just kind of incorporated 52 years ago. They've been around for so long, but it's never been a mass producer. They've always been kind of a collector circle and very kind of private grower with really intentional collecting practices. And that's what I really look up to. That's something that resonates a lot when I talk to Marie, when I talk to people of that growing age and their stage of their journey. I felt like it was meant to be. I'm super excited. Actually, every so often, you know, I get some self-doubt. Did I actually make the right move? But someone has to do it. And these plants and these legacy need to be preserved. So with that news, I launched a separate line from my company. Now it's called PCC Legacy. So all of the Reed Gardens plants that are original clones from all of these years ago, Delta Force, Circus Peanut, some of the more secluded ones that you rarely hear of, like Lila Miano, actually was started in Reed Gardens. Tropical World. So some of the plants that started in Reed Gardens that have been kind of coveted in certain circles have all moved to my company and have now moved into the PCC Legacy line. So I am focusing more on producing and cultivating these original clones to kind of breathe a new life to them. I think there is space for bringing Reed Gardens cultivars into the public a little more, right? Because Marie is actually quite interesting. You have to know her and you have to have her phone number, and you would have had to call her and make an appointment and bring cash for a check to go shopping. She did not do any social media. She didn't do anything. I had asked her, like, she wouldn't even take electronic transfer. She didn't have any of those set up. She would give you a little carbon, handwritten copy of, you know, the old receipt type, where it's like, you know, like three copies, because there are two carbon copies in the bottom and then one real receipt.
Oh, yeah.
Top.
No, our business used to have those. The dot matrix printers, man. Those things sound awful when they print, but they do like what you're saying, where they make the three different, the pink, the yellow, and the white piece of paper all smashed together, and that was your record keeping. I mean, and what you're talking about, though, and I just want to celebrate everything you've accomplished, because there are so many people, and I know, you know, Brett and I have talked about this at length, that the average age, it's getting better in our industry. And I think COVID helped out in like a macro way of looking at plants, especially now when we talk about, which we could go on for an hour about, like, I can't wait until all of the growers can have DNA testing available for a decent price. And, you know, what CRISPR and other, you know, gene modifications will mean to the industry. And there's so much science we have in like the medical field, for example, that currently is just out of reach for plants. However, the big problem pre-pandemic was all these growers are, and I mean this in the most loving way, I won't say old, I'll say super experienced, but also not going to be in the industry for another 20 years, 25 years. They may not have somebody on their family or, you know what I mean, in their lineage that wants to take this over. And I think what's so cool about what you've done is you have to make those stories stick. We call this the Every Plant Story podcast. Those stories matter. You know, heaven forbid anything happened to the handful of people where these plants are exclusively in private collections. you know, the story is now lost. So I think what you were able to do, how many plants in total did you gain in the acquisition?
I can tell you it's in the 3 digits.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. And then they're really old and large plants. So some of the plants are in 20-gallon pots. Some of the plants are actually taller and larger than my mother. So if you grow anthuriums at all, and I can tell you that some of the stumps, so the tree stem, some of the stems are probably 6 inches across.
Wow. Wow.
It's a tree stump. I'm thinking about propagating, right? And it's like, what kind of saw am I going to need? You know, I can't just cut them note by note. Like, I don't know what kind of cutter I can do.
You know? Yeah, it's why a lot of anthuriums are brought to market via TC, because compared to, you know, chopping and propping a pink princess, as mentioned earlier, I mean, yeah, you let the plant produce 3 nodes. There's a, you know, 3 or 4 inches in between nodes. You take the chop and sure. You prop. That's pretty simple, but anthuriums don't always, you know, necessarily do that way. What's your plans with the collection you were able to achieve? I know probably you don't even have, you know, the entire plan. I like letting things right. kind of happen naturally, but are people going to be able to see these offered by Plant Zaddy in the future?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, of course. And then of course, if you know, the audience is extremely interested, you can always go onto my Instagram, and there's like a whole spiel and a speak about my kind of rough plan and what I really, really wanted to do with these. But the gist of it is, a major part of this acquisition, I was very adamant on not only acquiring the plants and those lines, I also acquired all of the grownness, their history. Like, I wanted all of the legacy that came with them. So I have all of Marie's notes from all of these years, whatever that she has, whatever that remains, information about it. The letter from John Banta explaining to Marie what a circus peanut is, and then Jay-Z, you know, kind of refuting or correcting it, like all of this history, and I'm still sitting through piecing these history together, right? It's kind of like a historical project, really. You know, and then Marie, every so often, we'd be in contact, and she would send me, oh, these are the old forum. Like, you probably know what a forum is, Shane.
Not quite a social media post. We've that's a little predating that.
Yeah. So I now have access to these, like, weird old forum talks. That's how they used to communicate, right? And you know, so, like, these really interesting things, like how people name these, what they observe, whether or not. Interesting, and there's a lot of information. So the PCC legacy line, for every single plant that has this legacy, I'm not really just about selling the plant. I'm also going to give this history and this story to the buyer. And they are all going to be on my website under PCC, theplantstudytherapy.com/legacy. That's the specific part that has all of them, and I will be periodically updating. And I think I try to restock every 2 weeks or so with some of these clones. Of course, they don't grow very fast, right? And so it's not like I can produce that many at a time, but I do sell out almost every week. So that's why I don't want to, like, broadcast too much about, like, having these available. I do have them available almost every week or every other week. But every week or every other week, I may only be able to put up 1 or 2, because that's just how fast I am capable of producing. And I don't want to stress or press these plants too much. And of course, a lot of them are flowering. So there are a lot of different issues and factors I have to put into mind when I'm deciding what to do with each plant. But they are available, just very limitedly because of the nature of the quantity that I have and the current state. But yeah, and then every single plant that you buy from the legacy line will actually get a legacy story. I would tell you, this is so-and-so who, you know, like, do we fit that this about this plant on this date? And then Marie got this plant from that day. You know, like, this is the date that Lila Mayano gave the first Lila Mayano plant to Marie. I have tags of those, and I have notes for Marie on the date that she received them. But I want all of it, and I wanted all of it with the acquisition. And I'm trying to keep track of all of them, because I think it's, like you said, you know, every plant story, right? All of these older clones have a lot of history that they have witnessed. They have been passed, their genetics have been passed through many, many great hands. Like you mentioned earlier, some of these people have already passed, and we don't have people who inherit them, like Amy Donovan. When Amy Donovan passed away, Free Gardens purchased the, acquired their collection. So now that collection passed to me. So really, I did buy all the Free Gardens, Amy Donovan acquisition as well. So it's kind of like multiple generations of growers and multiple legacy lines have been instilled in the genetics, and I don't want those stories to be lost.
Yeah, we talk often about how many, for a lot of these, and I think it's something that's been really interesting, and I don't think it's so much like the collector's market. I guess you could apply it to the collector's market, thinking about it, but I do think a lot of growers, especially like one of my, you know, my heroes that unfortunately my grandpa and my dad, to the best of their recollection, met, but I never did, was Bob McCauley, right? And when he passed away, his wife described that McCauley's finale, properly termed, but in those papers, that was his wife filing for that, and in it, she describes the fact that there were hundreds of other, philodendron hybrids that are not described, and that Bob McCauley didn't think were viable. A lot of these people were looking for something, you know, specifically looking for the leaf shape to change or for a particular color or something. But that also wasn't to say that any of the other stories of, I hate to use this phrase at all, but quote unquote rejects, right, from the collection, their stories are simply just not there anymore, right? It's really cool what you're doing. Can you talk about how much are you still going back and forth with Marie? Also, your whole thing about the forums, that is really funny, because I remember the early days of forums, and the one thing people forget about that history, because there's still forums today, right, on certain websites, but back then the people who were interacting in a forum refresh the page, and with the AOL dial-up sound, waited a solid like a minute and a half for the page to load and for them to read plain text from somebody else across the world. It's just certainly different from you and I being able to do this, you know, on the phone, record a podcast. We can go live on Instagram. We can, the ability for us in 2024 to tell a plant story is so much more elaborate. We can make a YouTube video. We can, you know what I mean? We can make it in 4K. Yeah. We can have footage out the butt. But there's no, that just didn't exist for a lot of these older growers and hybridizers and hobbyists for the longest time. It was plain text in a forum, like what you mentioned. Mm-hmm. Do you have an ongoing conversation? Have you thought about like making content with Marie on some of these plants?
I am in constant contact with her. I don't think this is too much of a stretch to actually put it on the broadcast, but I think Maria has always kind of more or less liked me, because she gave me her phone number and she texted me often before I even acquired her Ethereum. And then, you know, Marie actually doesn't talk too much, or doesn't actually do too much of you know, any kind of technical thing. So the fact that she texted me and was like, "Ooh, this is nice," you know. I am in constant contact with her. We are still sifting through things. She sent me a bunch of these forums recently. So I'm still sifting through them. And I can tell you, it's a fun trip down nostalgia memory lane. Even though I'm not even like part of that conversation, you can kind of construct, or at least like, kind of these older growers, some of them have not, their personality came through my screen when I was reading through them, because it really felt like a social media post. You know, like it's like a different platform, but these people behave just like we do on the Facebook post when there's drama. It's really interesting. And I'm just loving it and eating it up. I don't watch TV anymore. I haven't watched TV for a long time. But these are fun. You know, instead of just like going on one Facebook post and people just like yapping about something, you know, that's it's like, oh, this plane came up like the $40,000 Montera, the target account right now. I'm here reading about how people describe and refuting the smell of the circus peanut flower and whether or not it even should be called circus peanuts, because some people refused and actually said that, well, I had a flower and it didn't smell like peanuts or beer. And I've had peanuts and beer all day today. So like those are the kind of things that they are saying in these old platforms. You know, the circus peanuts were actually made in the 1980s. So I don't know. Yeah,
it's the same discourse. And I think that that's really cool. I think the one cool thing about forums, though, and maybe I'm wrong, I haven't read the ones. You should send me some private links later. I'd love to read some of this. I'm fascinated by plant stories. However, like, I do think that the way in which people interacted in a lot of forums and things was far more about, for lack of a better phrase, accuracy versus drama. Like, it was still drama. Yeah. It was still fingers being pointed, but it was like kind of more, I don't want to say academic, but, you know, based on kind of merits, not just, oh, I could never afford. I mean, even just the way I was thinking, since we're talking about the $40,000 Monstera thing, my first reaction to my wife transparently was, my God, that's a new car. You know what I mean? That's a year worth of mortgage payments. But I'm not really actually talking to my wife about, like, is this really a unique cultivar? We have to wait to see how it blooms and see if that's any particular different. You know, we've entered a different thing. But the wealth of knowledge from these more experienced growers out there is insane. Yeah. The amount that they knew and the amount that they traveled the world sometimes to acquire these things or whatever else. We talked to Enid at NSE Tropicals quite frequently about just how the IAS conference has changed over the year, the International Aeroid Show and that kind of thing. What was your favorite moment? I if I recall correctly, you were driving in a U-Haul, right?
Yeah. Or,
How was that? How long did it take you to load up that whole truck?
Okay, so I think it was 16, 20, something like that. Truck full of plants. But the truck, of course, had to give me the only one that they had that was actually leaking, and it was actually very squeaky the entire drive. It was a four-day drive from Miami, Florida, back to Southern California.
You drove from Miami to California?
For 4 days with a truck full of plants,
Oh, my Lord. The respect for you has just gone through the roof. I regularly drive to North Carolina, but I have never made that. And Brett and I got, and our videographer got, when we went to visit Steve's Leaves in Texas, our flight was changed around and we missed it. So we drove from Dallas to Orlando. And I felt like that was the end of the world, my friend. I had never driven through Alabama or anywhere. I won't say what speed we were going throughout that trip. But so you drove from California. You drove from Miami to California and then California back to Miami?
No. So we rented one way and we drove 4 days from Miami to California. Just one way.
Okay.
We flew into Miami.
All right. I think you're a little less crazy based on that. Well, this is so exciting and I can't wait to see. I know we've talked several times. I can't wait to see what you do in preserving the legacy of what Ree Gardens has been able to do. Your acquisition is amazing.
Thank you. There is so much more work to do. And you know, there are good days and there are bad days. There are days where I doubt myself. Of course, I think everyone goes through that, especially making such a huge decision. And I think a lot of that kind of like energy is more about something is happening, right? I can feel that I don't know what, but like things are happening. And that kind of feeling is there's a lot of momentum. There's a lot of energy. There's a lot of movement. And I'm not quite able to pin the movement yet. But, most days I'm very excited to work on these. They are all now kind of recovered from the drive and from winter. So they are now blooming or sprouting new leaves and all that. So I see a lot of spring So there's a lot of hope. There's a lot of action to be taken. I'm super excited about it. I think it's going to be a great era for these plants, I think. In terms of content, I thought about it. I just don't know what platform, what I want to do. I think, because I'm part of that millennial era, was like, if it's not on the internet, then it's not real.
Correct. Right? Well, if you need a videographer, I have a couple 4K, 6K cameras. I'd be happy to volunteer my time if we want to schedule that.
Yeah, you know, so like I just need to, you know, once I put it out there, and it's documented and it's up in the cloud, then it's going to live there forever and it will actually live beyond me. Okay. So I think those are the kind of legacy that we can leave these days now. Yeah.
Absolutely. And I mean, this podcast will live on as long as we pay the bill for it to live on, but I don't plan on it going anywhere, and we're cross uploading a lot of stuff to YouTube now too.
Well, you can probably just set up a foundation to fund this podcast. That's what people do, right? And the foundation just lives on forever.
Yeah, I would love, and I can't wait to, you know, every time, like when I reached out to you a couple weeks ago and I was like, hey, like, let's get on the podcast, because I think for listeners to the podcast, our podcast episode, you know, there's so many podcasts, even I listen to, right, that come out daily or weekly or whatever the release schedule is. And I'm like, that's awesome. I just kind of make them when I have a cool story to tell, you know, I went the winter without making a podcast episode. Okay, cool. You know, we'll just kind of recap it. I have two questions for you, and I'm throwing you a curveball. I didn't tell you this one ahead of time, but I think one of the questions I think most often, and again, kind of rewinding to the beginning of your story, right? When you're saying you were, I think your phrase was pandemic born, right? Into the industry. People often ask me, or maybe even you see the posts in social media groups, like, it, you know, should I get started in this? You know, I have an interest. I have a back patio or a small backyard greenhouse. And, you know, what's your advice based on what you've learned in the industry? To anyone who, you know, maybe new, which obviously I have some reservation to encouraging people based on how the plant market is going right now. But like, what is important if somebody is going to start in this industry, in your opinion?
Okay. So starting, inching into selling.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Here's the one advice, and I stick to it every single time, and that is only buy plants that you love. That's how you should start. Because the industry and the market, like you said, have a lot of turmoil. There's a lot of ups and downs, and especially when you're newer, you are less likely to have the pulse on the market. You probably don't have all of the inner information. What's about to happen next? Like you briefly mentioned, and probably in your previous podcast, the tissue culture takes about 18 months, and you know, more or less. So you, as a newer seller, quote unquote, you may not know what is in TC now, how long they've been in TC, when are they going to hit the market, what's next, what's big, what's not, what's on the upturn, what's on the downturn, all of these weird turmoil. You don't need all of that information, right? But the key thing to me is if I buy a plant that I really love, then I can sit through and withstand all of these turmoil. Even if I buy a piece of princess for $128 for one cutting, but I really love it, and it was 4 years ago, and I grow it out, in a year I will get about 12 to 18 leaves. And then in another year, even if I sat out here and I propagated that one plant for $128 4 years down the line, I still would have made probably $500 at $20 a plant right now.
Right.
If I actually love it, continue to grow it.
But you have to have that passion for...
You have to.
Yeah. I love that. That is great advice. All right. To wrap up, I know you got to get going. You're moving and shaking and all over the place, which I can't wait to have you visit us here. And maybe if you need some help.
I would love to.
maybe if you need some help with content, we'll travel out to you and help you with that. But we ask this of most of our podcast guests, only because I feel like when people, whether they're hobbyists or professional growers, I mean, there are growers we talk to, you know, I have relationships with in Florida that operate, you know, 10 times, 100 times. Mm-hmm. I think Costa Farms is 5,600 times, or 5,600 acres were less than 1 acre, right? So they're exponentially larger. However, one thing I think unites all of us, if we've been in the market long enough, is we've all made a tragic plant mistake. We propped something too soon. We killed something we spent a lot of money on. What is, you know, my point is experts make the same mistakes that even you have. I think when people in like private collections, not saying growers or sellers, but just, you know, consumers, when a plant dies for them, they're like, oh my God, I'm the worst. Like clearly Harry and Shane can grow plants better than I can, right? But I think the thing we need to like pull the veil back on is even the best of the best, we all make some tragic plant mistakes, or sometimes maybe the plant decides to make a tragic mistake and we don't even understand why it happened. But what is your biggest plant failure or loss?
Okay. My biggest plant loss was actually an import. And it was not my first import. It was actually way deep into my importing career already. So I already had routes and I already planned out and I understood all the logistics. I did everything right. And I still lost a giant shipment. A giant shipment. And it was probably $85,000, $200,000 at the time.
$85,000.
Yeah.
All right. So I think that makes all my experiences feel like rookies right now. How did that happen? I mean, you talk about imports, though. I feel like imports are, no offense, but the Wild West. There are great international businesses. There are some that maybe you can't trust.
Yeah. You know, and I am very international. You know, the audience hasn't picked that up yet. It was a giant shipment from Japan, and I routed it through USDA, and it was fine. I was in Wisconsin at the time. It was towards the end of my Wisconsin. It was during March, so it should have been warm enough. And of course, you know, like I was very experienced. I actually mapped it all out. I routed it to Chicago, and I was going to go and pick up cargo at Chicago. There was a really big snowstorm, and the plants were all fine. All those boxes were fine. They packed beautifully. The truck that took the plants from the plane to the cargo area got stuck in the snow for 4 hours.
No.
So all the damage happened while it was just sitting on a pile of snow outside while they were trying to load the truck. And there was nothing anyone else could have done.
Oh, my God. Listen, I'm about to cry, man. That's a terrible story.
You wanted a horror story.
Yeah, no, but I mean, that's important. It's a failure, right? And sometimes it may not even be that we did it wrong. It could be, a part of the supply chain.
Right. You know, like who I could not have blamed my supplier. I could not have blamed the logistics. Like, I honestly very well. I did everything right. I didn't even route it to my home. Like, I drove to Chicago from Madison. That's a 3-hour drive. Just so that I could actually shorten the time. I could not have predicted that the truck would just break down in the middle of a snowstorm and like they wouldn't load. Just literally, it was maybe a mile drive from the plane, from the airport to the cargo area. That's all it needed. And it just stuck there in the snow for 4 hours and all of them got frozen. All of them.
Oh, no. Oh, my gosh. Harry, I'm so sorry.
Yeah, that was the highlight of my career.
I'm sure you understand, but you know, seasonal business, right? Like winter is different than summer. You know, the amount of times that I've seen a photo of a customer being like, I don't know. I had to kind of like dig this package out of like, it was literally, I'm thinking one situation specifically, the box, you could kind of see like the corner of the box, right? But it probably had a foot and a half of snow, 18 inches of snow, just piled on top. And they hadn't even opened it yet, but they DM'd us on Instagram. And they said, do you think these are okay? And I was like, I have the best, you know, we probably put a heat pack in there. I have a slight amount of hope. But also, you just sent me a picture of a box that's clearly been like snowed in for 24 hours and has 18 inches of snow on the top. Like, those things happen, man.
Right. Yeah.
Well, what but if people in closing, if people want to follow you, you want to give your links and we'll put them in the podcast description. So if you go down to the podcast description or go to everyplantstory.com, they'll be able to see those notes and click on them and go to everything you have going on. It's been so awesome. So awesome to have you on the podcast. How do people connect with you? Because obviously you're going to have some pretty limited edition inventory here, spring 2024.
Yeah. So of course my website is where I load everything and that's probably the easiest. The link would definitely be there, plantbodytherapy.com. And then my Instagram is kind of where I live. So I live on the cloud. But I do kind of want to end this whole thing with one thing because you keep bringing up Enid and I look up to her a lot, but it's really mainly because I don't say this a lot and I think that it needs to be said that I genuinely think that Enid single-handedly changed the farm-to-table style of the houseplant market industry.
She was one of the only people doing what used to be known as, quote, mail order, end quote.
Mm-hmm.
Not, you know, before e-commerce was around, it was mail order. It was being able to go to a website and then you had to go to your, I'm sure Marie did this at certain times at ReGarden and you filled out your, I know these to you and I, we don't really use them anymore, but there's these things called checks, which is a piece of paper and you write how much it is and who it's to and you sign on the bottom. And then you would put that in an envelope, send it to Enid and say, you know, these are the three plants I want. And you'd wait 30 days to get your plants. Yes, she was fundamental to the aroid community in the United States.
Right. And then a lot of people probably don't recognize or understand why NSA Tropicals and why Enid is so well loved and so well known. It's, I think of course, she's a great grower and a great collector. But I think the fact that she pioneered that and you know, because prior to that, people were like, wait, what? I can put a plant into a box and ship it across the country? That doesn't sound right. Right? But nowadays, everyone's like, oh, yeah, anyone who has a plant can just, you know how to ship it. Like, almost anyone in the plant scene knows how to ship a plant now. And I think all of that was pioneered and probably catalyzed by Enid's work. So I owe a lot of my career to her, right? I think there are a lot of that when credit is due, we probably should mention and actually say that so people understand that there are a lot of people that came before us. And of course, there are people who will inherit all of these and, you know, make it better.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Harry, it has been an amazing privilege to have you on the podcast. Thanks so much for joining me. And I know we'll talk soon again. Maybe we'll have you back on. I know Tyler Thrasher, we just did a follow-up like a year and a half later from his first podcast episode. So maybe we get to do the same with you in a year or two from now.
Yeah, maybe all of the Anthuriums will be thriving and I'll make new hybrids by then. But thank you so much for having me. It's been wonderful to kind of get my thoughts out on the open without any kind of agenda, really. It's very helpful to talk about these things. So thank you so much for having me.
Of course. And we'll talk soon.
Yep. Bye-bye.
All right, guys. Well, that was awesome. Honestly, after we ended the podcast, he shared with me a couple other ideas for upcoming podcast episodes. So I'm going to work on those. We'll see what happens next in the podcast. I love being able to bring, it may not be the most regular podcast, but I love being able to bring these super unique stories from people in the industry, regardless of when they started, that have specific stories about how the plant market, you know, works. So if you have any ideas, please send them over to me. Never before released on a podcast, but go ahead and send me an email directly to shane@gabriellaplants.com. I think you can also use podcast@gabriellaplants.com, but shane@gabriellaplants.com, S-H-A-N-E. And with that, thank you guys so much for listening to this episode of the Everplant Story Podcast, and we'll see you again soon. Bye.
If you have a question for Shane or the podcast crew, you can always email them to podcast@gabriellaplants.com for a chance for your question to be answered in an upcoming podcast episode. Send your questions to podcast@gabriellaplants.com. Looking for your next house plan on a budget? We have one of the widest selections available at GabriellaPlants.com, with hundreds of options grown just for you and ready to ship directly from our greenhouse to your house.